Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. Since President Trump pulled the U.S. out of the Paris Climate Agreement, states and cities have instituted policies to reduce greenhouse gases that contribute to climate change on their own. By executive order, Governor Tom Wolf has pledged to cut Pennsylvania's emissions by 26% by the year 2025 and 80% by 2050. What will it take to get to those goals? Joining us on today's program is Pennsylvania Secretary of the Department of Environmental Protection, Patrick McDonnell. Secretary McDonnell, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me again, Scott.
Also joining us is Governor Tom Wolf's Deputy Chief of Staff, Sam Robinson. Mr. Robinson, welcome to the show.
Great to be here, Scott. Thank you.
If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or a comment on WITF's Facebook page, on Twitter. We are at Smart Talk WITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. All right, we hear the numeric goals, 26% by the year 2025, 80% by 2050. Secretary McDonnell, how do we get there?
It's not one thing, it's a lot of things. We have the governor's executive order, which laid out the goals that we're striving toward, as you said, by 2025 and 2050. But we also have our climate change action plan. We have which has a big focus on energy, because that's 88% of the greenhouse gas emissions come from either electricity, transportation, buildings, and energy use. So that's a major focus of what we're doing. And a lot of this is starting the conversation about how we get there. We do have some tools available to us, Driving Pennsylvania Forward being one of the more recent.
What is that, just so I get context?
Thanks to the federal settlement for Volkswagen, we have access to $118 million for diesel replacement. So we're looking at electric vehicle, natural gas vehicles, charging infrastructure, so that we can reduce diesel emissions, but it's also going to have a greenhouse gas effect.
Mm-hmm. So, I interrupted you. Go ahead.
No. So just saying, again, there's not one technology, there's not one project, there's not one pot of money, one industry that this is about. This is about state government, industry, communities, residents all coming together and doing what they can to address what is truly the largest environmental issue we have.
When you say the largest, the governor said that too. Mm-hmm. Talk about that. We're talking about climate change, obviously. Sure. The largest environmental issue that we have. Do people know that?
I do a lot of thinking about this, and I think it's challenging because we tend to deal with the thing in front of us, and we're talking about something that is, even in the frame of these plans, is 2025, 2050, and it feels a ways off. But we're also starting to see those impacts now. We talk a lot about flooding and the impacts of that. Some of what we're dealing with in the Climate Change Action Plan is, frankly, adaptation. These global climate processes are already having impacts on the Commonwealth. So a lot of this is about how do we respond, how do we react to that with our transportation infrastructure, with being more resilient during flooding events, supporting communities that are dealing with those impacts.
You talked about flooding, and Governor Wolf mentioned this as well, that we already are seeing some of the impacts here in Pennsylvania of climate change. What are some of the others?
Sure. So some of the things that we will see and we'll see more of are additional high heat days, but also, and I think there's been a lot of education around this over the last few years, days like we've had here locally and in the Midwest recently, we're going to see a lot higher swings in terms of temperature. So you're going to see colder, bigger impacts on climate. You're also going to see higher heat days during the summer. We're going to see extension of time periods where you have mosquitoes and other insects that are their own vectors for disease and health impacts. So it's a lot of different impacts. And the good news is a lot of the solutions that we talk about go right to not just solving some of these problems, but making us more resilient as we're dealing with them.
Mm-hmm. Sam Robinson, as Governor Wolf's Deputy Chief of Staff, I want to talk a little bit about the political aspects of this and the policy aspects of this. The governor, when he made this announcement last week about the emissions, now obviously this is following up on what had been done earlier with the Climate Action Plan, but the governor did this through executive order. Why?
Absolutely. Well, I think that first thing to say is that that executive order, which the governor issued in early January, was not in isolation. This is an issue that we've really been working on and tackling throughout the first term, be it with the Clean Power Plan, which Pennsylvania was an early leader on, be it enhanced building codes, be it increased funding for solar or changes to the way that the solar market works in Pennsylvania to try and implement more renewable energy. A lot of things were already in motion, as you alluded to, and then the governor really thought that at this point it was an important thing to take this next step, which with the executive order was to, for the first time, set a real goal for our carbon emissions and greenhouse gas emissions in Pennsylvania. And so I think that putting down that marker first of, you know, here's a thing that we know is a significant challenge, the most significant challenge in the environmental space at the moment. And then also setting out some lead by example things that we can do through executive action to make state government more efficient, to save state taxpayers money, and ultimately lower emissions from the Commonwealth itself.
When you say save state taxpayers money, in what way?
Yeah, so a big piece of the executive order is about reducing energy demand in state buildings, about increasing the number of vehicles in our fleet that are electric vehicles and moving towards that clean vehicle future that we're looking to get to. When we construct new buildings or reconstruct upgrade existing facilities, building those to a higher, more energy efficient standard, all of that saves, bottom line, saves taxpayer dollars. And so I think there's both opportunities to do smart things to address climate change, but it also has a real bottom line impact for the Commonwealth.
But that's what, and this was part of what the governor's executive order did, was create this green government. Is a green gov council, I guess, is the proper name, right?
Everything's got to have a flashy moniker, right?
You're right. Green gov council. If I'm screwing it up, maybe other people are too, but no, it is green gov council. And they will, and Secretary McDonald, you're part of this, right? Mm-hmm. Look at some of the things that you just mentioned. But getting back to the executive order, ultimately, won't it take legislation, though, to make this policy? Because the governor just can't say, he can say it when it comes to state government, but won't it just have the impact of encouraging Pennsylvania businesses or those that do emit, that have emissions out there, that there really is no legal consequence to them?
We think that setting goals are important, right? You can't get to, without planning, you don't get to the place that you want to be. And so we thought that it was really important to put down via executive action what our goal for 2025 and 2050 is. And then you can have conversations with folks in the General Assembly and in private business, in the nonprofit sectors across the state about how do you get there. As we said, and I think the Climate Action Plan that the Department of Environmental Protection is currently in the process of finalizing really lays out a number of good steps, some of which would absolutely require legislation, but many of which would not. And so that, you know, it's important, we think, to set a goal and then look at those steps that you can take working with the legislature and others to get there.
The other thing I'd say is I think there's always, you know, the goal is important, but when you talk about the solutions, it's important that we not talk about those in isolation, right? A lot of what we're doing is recognizing, for example, where the energy industry today and where we need to go tomorrow with it. So some of what we're looking at, I mean, frankly, not even looking at state action, right? But companies like Shell and BP are now attaching their own performance bonuses to climate change goals, and in terms of how their executives are reimbursed. This is the direction energy markets are moving. This is the direction surrounding states are moving. And we want to be in front of that, not running to catch up.
Mm-hmm. And completely understand. I mean, Pennsylvania is not in isolation with this. In fact, Pennsylvania is one of about 20 states that have signed on, most of them in the east. There are some transportation issues. I want to talk about that, too, about how transportation emissions are reduced. So I guess the question I have and a follow-up to that is, Pennsylvania is one state. There are cities across the state. Pittsburgh, for one, is, and I know there are many others that have come up with their own plans as a result of the federal government pulling out of the Paris Climate Agreement. Is it enough? And Sam, I'll ask you this question. Is it enough? Pennsylvania, granted, we are a state that produces a lot of these emissions. But is it enough when we're talking about a global problem?
Well, it is a global problem, and every state, every local municipality can do their part to try and address that problem. I think we've seen really strong leadership from cities and municipalities, communities across the state on the issue. We're trying to do our part at the executive level with the governor, who obviously believes this is a challenge that we need to tackle head on. It's a major challenge. It's not going to be easy getting to the solutions that we need, but we think that we're working in a smart way to move in that direction.
26% by the year 2025. I mean, that for those who can't believe how time flies, it's only 6 years from now. I mean, yes, you have some plans in place, but that sounds, and then when I look at 80% by 2050, I mean, that sounds like a very ambitious goal.
It is, and but frankly, it ties back to the science around this, which is how do we keep global warming and our portion of the contribution to that? How do we keep rising temperatures from not going above that 2 degrees Celsius? There's even been some reports more recently that have said 1.5 degrees Celsius is an important marker. So again, I think one, it goes back to that goal setting, but two, you know, it's important to remember 26% from 2005 by 2025. So in 2005, we were at 329
million. That's
right.
We should mention this is measured against 2005 emission levels.
So we were at 325 million metric tons of carbon equivalent. Today, we're at 288. You know, we need to go down from there. So, you know, we've already taken some steps. A lot of that is because we've seen that transition in the energy space from coal to natural gas to renewables. Technology and markets are helping in this, but we want to make sure we're very deliberate about understanding where energy technology, energy economy, the general economy is going, so we can support both energy development here, but also the smart use of that energy by businesses manufacturing here within the Commonwealth.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. We're talking about Governor Wolf's climate action plan, and actually this is just the latest, where the governor issued an executive order last week that would set goals to reduce emissions here in Pennsylvania. By the year 2025, it would be 26% to reduce emissions, 80% by the year 2050. Our guest today, Pennsylvania Secretary of the Department of Environmental Protection, Patrick McDonnell, and Governor Tom Wolf's Deputy Chief of Staff, Sam Robinson. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Let's take a call from Mike in Harrisburg. Mike, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call.
Yes, you're welcome.
I'd like to address what I call the elephant in the room. And let me tell a very short story. Back in 91, one of my friends from up in one of the New England states led the only U.S. expedition to the top of Mount Everest, came back and gave lectures about that experience in 1991, this was. And one of the main points he was making was the glaciers are all melting. 1991. How do we address the fact that one half, at least, one half of the political motivation in the U.S. Congress and in the nation, evidently, will not address the majority, and it's more than a majority, the unique scientific facts behind global warming and climate change? How do we address this?
Mike,
it really is a deep concern. Go ahead.
Mike, thank you very much for your call. And he has hit the nail on the head in many ways. In fact, Sam Robinson, one of the questions I had earlier when we were talking about doing this, the governor doing this by executive order, was whether the legislature has been contacted about this, whether they're on board with it. I mean, obviously, nothing has been put in legislative form, voted on. I don't know, just my sense is we don't have the opposition in the Pennsylvania legislature that we do in Washington in the Congress, as Mike mentioned, but there still are those who do not accept this as, the climate change as actually a thing, that it's happening.
Well, I think you don't have to go to Mount Everest to talk about this. We've seen over the last, in the 20th century, a rise in temperature of nearly 2 degrees in Pennsylvania. If things continue on the trajectory that they're headed, we're looking at another over 5 degree warming by mid-century. And those increases, those changes in precipitation are having impacts here in Pennsylvania. So by mid-century, we may not have skiing in Pennsylvania, just as one example of the changes. Secretary McDonnell mentioned a number of others. I think that those things that we're seeing on the ground here, massive increases in flooding, significant precipitation. We're seeing 10% more precipitation in the 20th century. That's supposed to increase by another 10% in an already wet state. That's having an effect on public opinion. When the governor talked to you about a month ago about climate change issues, he said, I travel across the state. I'm hearing from folks that they're experiencing a new climate paradigm, new weather that they've never seen before. And I think that that's having an effect on public opinion. Now, that sometimes takes a while to translate into public policy, but I think we're having new debates about climate and talking about it in a different way.
Isn't it frustrating, though, for you that whenever we're having this discussion, that you have to take the 2 minutes that you just did to explain why it's happening and the proof behind it? I mean, we have an administration in Washington that the president has said that he's not sure it's happening. He pulled the U.S. out of the Paris Climate Agreement. We're one of, I think, two countries in the world not signed onto it now, which, by the way, doesn't occur until 2020. But anyway, that whenever we have this discussion, I guarantee I'll get an email here, where's the other side? We're beyond the debate stage here, but you always have to defend the science and that it's happening. And Mike's right. You do have political barriers, and the polls have shown that you do have maybe half the country that says, well, I don't know whether I'm willing to make the changes that we need because I don't know whether it's happening or not.
Sure. So I'll say from my end, and I think having been around these issues in state government for the last 20 years, one of the differences today and why I think it is very much the right time to have the conversation is what was theoretical a decade ago, again, we're now out seeing. And some of the conversations that we're having are around flooding and issues that people are seeing, weather events that they've never seen. Some of the other conversations are even just around what does it mean for us as an agricultural state, right? In terms of the types of crops, increased precipitation, and what that does to cropland and how we manage that.
Just look at last year, 2018, the year of the rain.
Yeah, I do a lot of work with folks in the agricultural sector, and I heard over and over again that this year, this past year in particular, it took them forever to go out and like get the hay off the field and things like that, just because of the sheer volume of rain that we had. So this is having practical impacts today, and I think that helps drive the conversation. It's you know, there's an unfortunate element that you need to make it personal for the individual, but there's also that element of I think people are increasingly ready to have the conversation, and how do we get ahead of our flooding issues? How do we get ahead of what it means for the agricultural economy, our state forest system and state parks? How do we get ahead of these issues and drive it so we turn it into a positive for us economically in terms of job creation and growth?
People, that's one thing. Mm-hmm. But the people sitting under that green dome is another. This is not just something that the governor can do. I mean, we pretty much established it. We need all Pennsylvania state government, everyone to get on board with this, or at least the majority get on board with it.
Absolutely. But I also think, for example, you know, conversations like this are important. The executive order, in addition to it driving us demonstrating leadership in the state's role in meeting those goals with our own facilities, it also shows what's possible for others. Some of what happens, just, you know, simple technical thing with Department of General Services, is they develop procurement tools. Those tools become available to counties, municipalities, school districts as things that they can leverage and utilize to use a new energy efficiency technology or convert to combined heat and power and those kinds of things. So as we step through this, it actually also, one, becomes a good case study for someone, but two, we're also creating tools and roadmaps for others to see, that's something I can do, that's something that's going to save me money, that's something that that aligns with where I want to be as an organization.
Sam, you're chomping at the bit, I can tell.
Well, and I'll just say that, you know, this often gets framed as an either-or conversation.
Right, exactly.
And it really...
And that's the point I was making.
Yeah, yeah. And we want to talk about it much more as an all-of-the-above conversation. But when I go and talk to my colleagues in other states who have similar roles, they always, in states like Texas and North Carolina, they want to talk about solar renewal installers as a rural job creator, about wind farms as a rural job economic development strategy. And I think that we need to reframe that conversation here. There are real opportunities. The climate action plan that the department's putting together, the strategies, just a few of the strategies within that larger plan, are estimated to create 40,000 new jobs in Pennsylvania. So we need to frame it that way. It's not a conversation about sort of fossil fuels or renewables. It's about both, and how those can be an economic driver for the state.
Before we take more phone calls, just want to revisit the action plan and part of what the governor is proposing here. How big of a role are renewables in this?
Renewables play a major role in it in terms of, and it's a variety of strategies. So it's, again, looking at technologies. For example, how to, and some of it builds on previous conversation you and I have had about finding Pennsylvania solar future. So it's, how do we expand building scale solar? How do we incent community solar projects? Solar in particular, you know, we talk about not just as energy and as environmental, but also in resiliency, you know, spreading out how you get your power grants you more resiliency in your grid. And smooths out some things. There's a place where the intermittency starts to have an impact, and you need to be thoughtful about that within the grid. But
you mean like a day like today?
Yeah, you know, it's you're not going to get a consistent power signature out of that. But that's also one of the reasons why you want to talk about technologies like storage technologies and other things that are really nascent right now, but are about to come into their own here over the next decade.
Transportation, I touched on this a little bit earlier. Pennsylvania is one of a group of states in the Northeast that we're looking for ways to reduce our transportation emissions. I have to say, I was a little bit surprised. I saw a figure that Pennsylvania's emissions, they're only 28%. Okay, only. It's still almost a third. But compared to some other states where it's up to 40%, that transportation emissions, 28% here in Pennsylvania, What do we do about that? Because, again, this brings in a larger picture. It's not just – they don't make vehicles just for Pennsylvania. Maybe they do in California, but not just for Pennsylvania. How do we reduce those transportation emissions?
Sure. And I'll state exactly the reason you just laid out is why we thought it was useful to join the Transportation Climate Initiative. We're still having the conversation about what that looks like in terms of markets and policies. Specifically that the states would look at. And it is, you know, we are a major transportation hub. So decisions being made about trucks in New York and in Connecticut have an impact here, and we need to be part of that conversation. I'll say again, I feel like we are very well positioned. We're, one, an electricity exporter. So as you start talking about moving toward electric vehicles and impacts on the grid, we are very well positioned to take advantage of a strength that we have in the state in terms of electricity production. Natural gas vehicles for fleets is another option that we have supported, would look to support more of, to help drive that conversation as well. So there's a number of options there. And don't want to lose, you know, it's one of those things that makes complete sense, but, you know, we need to figure out what the policies, procedures around it are, is just reducing vehicle miles traveled, getting more people into one car and less, you know, single driver in the car. Which we all see every morning, right?
But has that worked other places?
Yes, in terms of some of its mass transit and some of its employer incentives for carpooling and other things. So there are options there. It's something, again, we need to be deliberate about. But it's also something that comes almost at no cost. It's one of those strategies in the plan that you look at, and it's actually a negative cost because it's returning money to people's pockets.
You know, I don't always want to sound like I have a but. earlier this week, we were talking about on the program expanding Interstate 83. It's only like a 12-mile stretch, but from six lanes to 12 lanes. Interstate 81 for 100 miles, doubling the size of it. That doesn't seem to mean, obviously, we have to deal with the reality of the volume of traffic we have in central Pennsylvania. But that also seems like potential for much more in the way of emissions.
Well, it again depends on how you look at it. If you have that same vehicle fleet today on that, and you're relieving traffic congestion, it means less idling. It means less actual operation of the vehicles. So, you know, it's something you need to look at carefully in terms of the emissions profiles, but. You know, if you're stopped in traffic, you're usually not turning off your vehicle, particularly
True.
On a day like this.
Quick question. Sam, does the administration, I mean, obviously the governor's office oversees all this, but when PennDOT comes up with a plan like that, is there communication with other agencies as to, okay, not only are you looking to reduce traffic congestion, but at the same time, have you thought about what idling will mean? Have you thought about the increased number of vehicles to be on the road that will increase emissions?
Absolutely. There's no one of the real focuses in the administration is reducing those silos, communicating between agencies. And I don't know on those two specific projects, but PennDOT has guidance about looking at greenhouse gas emissions for many of the projects that they conduct, be it a capacity expansion project like those or just sort of more basic transit projects. But greenhouse gas emissions calculations are baked into the analysis of every one of those projects.
Mm. I was just sitting here thinking about mass transit. There are some places, bigger cities, where mass transit is a major, major factor. Pennsylvania, I mean, every county in this state has mass transit. The bigger cities is where it has worked the best. But I always hear, in fact, earlier in the week when we had that conversation about expanding the lanes, Pennsylvanians say, well, what about like light rail, like they have in Baltimore or Washington? It just seems as though Pennsylvanians like to drive. And because we are a rural state, even though you know, there is mass transit available in all 67 counties, I don't want to say it's a losing proposition, but the state government say, okay, here's what we're going to do, and the customers will come?
So, and probably a better question for PennDOT in some ways in terms of some of the specifics. But
I agree.
But some of the things I know they're looking at is, for example, you know, electric vehicle, autonomous vehicles, which I think, you know, you're going to see some real changes to the way transportation infrastructure works here over the next, I don't even want to say 10, but 20, 30 years across the Commonwealth. So I think there's a variety of things that are converging in useful directions for a climate emissions conversation and also, you know, for just supporting the, you know, in ways that aren't a big lift for the average resident.
Mm-hmm. Sam?
Yeah, and I think there's also a sort of chicken and egg question there, right? Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah, and the governor recognized just yesterday had a major infrastructure announcement, Restore Pennsylvania. Part of that is looking at additional mass transit investments that we can make. And I think that when you provide people convenient options for mass transit, very frequently they take them. And so the governor knows that we need to continue to make investments in that area.
Let's take a phone call from Mike in Glen Rock. Mike, thanks for being patient.
Oh, that's fine. Thank you for having me.
Yes.
I wanted to ask, you may be aware that high carbon upstream emissions from fracking tend to cancel out any so-called clean burning benefits of gas, while fugitive methane emissions remain unknown and unchecked. What is the Commonwealth doing to both place the moratorium on new wells, as New York has done, and to also address fugitive methane emissions?
Thank you very much for your call. Moratorium, I hear it discussed by people like Mike, but that doesn't seem to be something that's going to happen here.
No, I mean, the couple of things I'd say are, one, as part of the Climate Change Action Plan, one of those strategies is reduction of methane emissions from the natural gas space, and exactly what they're talking about. Last year, we did new general permits for the industry for new wells to make sure that they have state-of-the-art leak detection and repair requirements. We're looking at requirements. It's focused on VOCs, but you get a co-benefit methane emission reduction for existing sources on the wells. So it is both part of the plan, and we do have some strategies we're actively pursuing to address it.
Is he accurate, though, that some of what you do to reduce emissions would be offset if we continue to have methane leaks and you know, some of the impacts of fracking?
I think I go back to one of the first things I said, which is it's not one thing, it's a lot of things. Using natural gas, particularly for combined heat and power projects and in the manufacturing space, can be a job creator and an emission reducer. But you need to be deliberate about making sure we are addressing those methane emissions through the natural gas infrastructure.
But let me go back to my original question.
Yeah, yeah.
Is he accurate, though, that some of the emissions reductions can be offset by that leakage?
It can. Yeah. If you have significant leakage and there's a variety of estimates out there of what those leakage rates look like. But if you have significant leakage, that can offset, which is why it's part of the plan.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to move on and talk about water in just a moment here. But I don't want to say wrap this up, because this conversation is related to the next conversation we're going to have about water. So with the governor's executive order, there are some things that actually will happen, as you mentioned earlier, Sam, about in state government, which could have an impact. But what does the governor want to see come out of this? What's the ultimate goal here?
Pennsylvania has a diverse energy mix. We've been a major energy producer for 200 years. We know that mix is important to our economy, but the governor also knows that the future of energy is clean and that we need to move towards that clean energy future as quickly as we can. Setting goals is important. We know that we need to move in the direction of achieving them as quickly as we possibly can.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Coming up on Monday Smart Talk, we have a couple really hot topics right now. Proposals to change how Pennsylvania votes, that's one. And also the American Lung Association has put out a report on smoking here in Pennsylvania. So you'll want to tune in to hear both of those segments coming up on Monday's program. When the American Society of Civil Engineers released their 2018 Infrastructure Report Card in December, Pennsylvania earned an overall grade point average of C-. Seven of the state's 18 critical infrastructure categories earn below average marks. Drinking water is one of the categories with a D grade because of an estimated $14.2 billion in infrastructure needs over the next 20 years. Aging wastewater and stormwater systems have equally alarming projected resource demands. Greg Scott was with us during that program and joins us again. Gregory Scott is the chairman of the American Society of Civil Engineers Pittsburgh Section Government Relations Committee. Mr. Scott, welcome back to the program.
Good morning, Scott. Thank you for having me.
And we still have with us Secretary McDonnell, who is Secretary of the Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection, and Sam Robinson, who is Deputy Chief of Staff to Governor Tom Wolf. If you'd like to join the conversation where we talk about water, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, the phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Greg, let's go back to your report card that was put out, well, I was going to say last month, but this is the 1st of February, late in 2018 with the report card for Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania did not fare well when it came to water issues. Why?
Well, Pennsylvania, we're an old state. A lot of our systems date back more than 100 years. We have the largest number of combined sewer overflow systems in the nation. That is where, turn of the 19th century, when cities were built, they simply built a large pipe. Both sewage and rainwater would be combined into a single pipe and taken out to a creek, stream, river, and simply just discharged. This was long before sewage treatment was really applied. That, of course, those were the sources for drinking water. It wasn't until about 1900 that drinking water really started drinking water treatment was starting to be deployed. Chlorine used in water systems you see around 1910 to 1920. But wastewater really didn't swing into big action until about the 1950s. So a lot of our problems are legacy problems. We just have old infrastructure. Fortunately for Pennsylvania, we have great water resources. We have lots of streams. We also get a lot of rainfall. We have these issues are just kind of both geographically and the fact that the systems are aged.
Looking at those three categories, stormwater, a D. Drinking water, a D, and that should concern, well, all these things are concerning, but the drinking water is one that may get many, many people's attention. But wastewater, D-. You touched on this, but why wastewater graded so poorly?
Well, as I said, the Pennsylvania has a unique challenge with a large number of combined sewer overflow systems and the large volume of pollutants that are then released in heavy storms to our receiving streams. So the dealing with that issue, I mean, you're trying to undo how the infrastructure was built 100 plus years ago, comes with extensive cost. You can't just build a treatment plant to handle the billions of gallons a city may discharge in a heavy rainstorm because the space, the size, the cost. So a lot of interest is now going into green infrastructure. How do we capture the rainwater and control it, how it's released into a combined sewer system, or completely captured, separated, and control its release out to a receiving stream and not commingle it with the sewage. All that work, it's a tremendous amount of work, and it's going to be very costly. And so, that burden on the condition, the current capacity, the needs, the funding to cover these needs is really kind of dragging that grade a little bit lower than drinking water and stormwater.
Well, you just uttered a phrase that I don't think anyone wants to think about, commingle with the sewage. That's not exactly a pleasant thought. All right, so let me turn to our guest here in the studio. You know, many times when we've discussed issues where there's been something like what the engineers are doing, and I ask someone in a policy position about it, they get kind of defensive. I get the sense that you don't disagree with these grades, Sam.
Well, I think that we know that we have a state that requires continued investment in order to keep all of our systems in a state of good repair. And just yesterday, the governor announced, as I already mentioned, a Restore Pennsylvania plan, which contains infrastructure upgrade spending proposals in a variety of areas. So we're talking about broadband, we're talking about blight remediation, but one major piece of it really is to address our water infrastructure, and that's partially in response to the flooding that we talked about in the earlier segment, but it's also absolutely about helping municipalities plan for stormwater. Many of the states, and Secretary McDonald can talk about this a little bit more, many communities across the state are currently grappling with compliance with new stormwater management plans to address the issues that that Greg just mentioned. So we know that additional resources are needed there. The cost side of it is a major piece, but we also have innovators in Pennsylvania. The Philadelphia Water Department, Lancaster, they've been incredible leaders in installing green infrastructure that that provides real benefits to communities in terms of the aesthetics of downtown while also managing these stormwater issues. We know that we got to get additional resources to them. That's what we're trying to do. But there are real opportunities to both improve the environment, improve local cityscapes, and provide jobs there as well.
We know that it would have been done if it didn't take money. The governor, what he proposed yesterday would, the infrastructure plan would be funded by a severance tax on natural gas drillers. Earlier we talked about politics. The Republican legislature leaders yesterday said that's not going to fly. We've been shot down, we meaning the administration. When I say we, I'm not in the administration. Pennsylvania has been shot down the last 4 years when it comes to a severance tax on natural gas drillers. So what makes you any more optimistic that that's going to happen this time? Because I think that both sides of the aisle would agree that this is a major infrastructure, whether it's water, whether it's any of the other things you discussed, that this is a major issue that has to be dealt with. I mean, the Trump administration, that was one of President Trump as a candidate, one of his priorities. Nothing's happened on it yet. But still, what makes you think that there's more of a chance this time?
Well, we think that it gets back to those needs, those local needs. Across the state, when you're getting a C-minus grade for your infrastructure overall, and in certain categories it's even lower grades than that, we're not happy to accept that. I don't think members of the legislature are happy to accept that in their communities. And so I think that we hope that folks will see the need for that infrastructure investment that we're proposing and understand that this is a way that we can get it, that really is going to help us move forward quickly.
Something I've mentioned, and Greg, I'll bring you back into the conversation here, is that often when we hear discussion of infrastructure, now the governor specifically addressed infrastructure needs yesterday, but often this conversation turns to creating jobs. That's a byproduct of this. But it seems as though a lot of our elected officials, that's their focus. This is a job creator rather than dealing with the infrastructure needs that we have.
Well, I think for me, I think of it in two ways. One, the infrastructure that we're talking about has to be done here. It's not something that you can outsource. It has to be done in the Commonwealth. So people actually have to do that work. I also know, as we have conversations, in the manufacturing space and other place, they want to know about the quality of the water and availability of that water. They want to know that they have good infrastructure to rely on. So it's both something that leads to some direct job creation, but it's also an enabler of conversations in some other economic space. The other thing I'd point out too is some of what was identified in the report are other outside of money are things we are working on and have been working on. So, for example, increasing the number of drinking water inspectors that we have. We passed fees last year. We've already hired 20 new inspectors. We're bringing on an additional 13. We've been very supportive of the idea that we have a lot of private water wells in the state, and we have no regulatory authority.
Some we don't even know old ones. We don't know where they are.
Correct. Yeah. So you know, having regulatory authority, just so we can make sure that when someone goes in and buys a house with a private water well, that they know that they're getting a good water well there, that there's standards around how it was constructed and built. Those kinds of things are critically important for us. So there's a number of things in this report which not only do we agree with, but we've been working to take some action on.
Mm-hmm. So Greg Scott, does the American Society of Civil Engineers, do you make recommendations or just identify the issues?
We do make recommendations. You know, we certainly support the state programs and funding the state's had in place. We applaud the governor's program to restore critical infrastructure, this new funding program. We advocate strongly down in D.C. for increased federal funding for the Safe Drinking Water Act and the Clean Water Act, which also the Clean Water Act also funds stormwater. Additionally, we're advocating for some things besides more money. One of the things we've been advocating for is authorization for municipalities to create stormwater utilities. The state legislature changed the Authorities Act about 4 years ago to allow the creation of stormwater authorities, but that isn't necessarily always the easiest thing for particularly rural and remote communities to create another layer of government. We want to make sure that the borough and township codes get changed to allow them another tool in the toolbox. They could create a utility that's run by the municipality to generate the revenues to cover stormwater, because historically that is covered by property tax, and it becomes really unbalanced. Property tax is not necessarily equated to the runoff you're generating. So we're advocating for some, these are not mandates, these are literally legislative tools for municipalities to seek solutions. And lastly, we work with the profession. We're advocating strongly, and DEP has already on their website, they have some great information on asset management. We're advocating for water and sewer authorities, whether they could be authority or they could be borough-owned or municipality-owned, and municipalities with their stormwater systems. Some of them are under the MS4 program, some are not. They need to use asset management principles for this infrastructure.
Mm. Hey, I'm going to interrupt because we only have about 2 minutes left, and I don't have time to ask you what MS4 is. but your response to what Greg had to say.
Municipal separate stormwater sewer system.
Okay, you better know that.
And I think one, I know there've been, and I'll admit I don't know the specifics off the top. I know there's been legislation that, for example, Representative Everett has had around some additional tools for municipalities, as he discussed. I think one of the things, as we've had MS4 permits for a number of years now, but in this current cycle, we're requiring reductions, 10% over a 5-year period of sediment, for example. So we need to get plans from the municipalities. And a couple of things that have happened there are, one, some of the sanitary authorities have combined municipalities and taken responsibility to lower the cost, which has been great. We have also are getting better mapping now of these, and that was again as Greg mentioned, one of the things that they identified.
Mm. We're almost out of time. I want to thank all three of you for being with us today. Sam Robinson, the governor came out yesterday with his infrastructure plan quickly. How much of a priority is this?
One of the top for the next few months. Obviously, we're also headed into budget season. These are separate initiatives, but the governor really believes that we need to get this done in order to help those communities with the stormwater impacts that we're talking about, with flooding, with blight remediation, with broadband, top priority for the governor.
Sam Robinson is Deputy Chief of Staff for Governor Tom Wolf. Pennsylvania's Secretary of the Department of Environmental Protection, Patrick McDonnell, and Greg Scott, Chairman of the American Society of Civil Engineers, Pittsburgh Section, Government Relations Committee. Gentlemen, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Coming up on Monday, we are going to talk about voting in Pennsylvania, also smoking in Pennsylvania. That's coming up on Monday's program, so be sure to tune in.